Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 97, recorded April 3rd, 2013. Mark Fraunfelder. Triangulation is brought to you by Shutterstock.com, with over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code Triangulation4. Time for Triangulation, my favorite show of the week, because I get to sit here with some of the best minds and most interesting people and just spend an hour of conversation, and I just love that. One of my favorite previous subjects is back again, Mark Fraunfelder. You probably know the name Mark Fraunfelder from a couple of places. Boing Boing, the wonderful, what do they call it, a compilation of interesting things on the internet, one of the earliest blogs I've ever read, and I continue to read every single day. He also is with Make Magazine, editor-in-chief. So if you are a maker, you probably very well aware of Mark Fraunfelder. But for years, he's really been kind of a, I don't know what, a pixie on the scene. It's just one of the sweetest guys I know, and I just adore him. Mark Fraunfelder, welcome to Triangulation.
Thanks a lot, Leo. It's fun to be here again.
You've almost had two lives, an analog and a digital life.
Yeah, I would say that. From a very early age, was really interested in digital or media, especially. I did a lot of mini comics and zines
yeah. More in those days, right?
Yeah. And zines. So Boing Boing started out as a print zine in 1987, I think, or 88 is when my wife Carla and I started it. And, I did it, pasted it up. Used a computer, but we would cut out the strips of paper because the kind of desktop publishing software I could afford in those days was really crappy. And so, take it down to the local Xerox shop and print up 100 copies of it. And it was a fun, exciting time. There was a zine called Fact Sheet 5. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before, but it was like this guy in upstate New York became a clearinghouse for the world of zines. And he would receive thousands of zines every 3 months. He would put out this thing called Fact Sheet 5, and they would be these capsule reviews of every zine that he received.
Holy moly.
And then it was very much like the Yahoo of the zine world in those days. So I would get a copy in the mail, it'd be a couple hundred pages long, and print it on cheap newsprint, and I would have a yellow highlighter, and I would just highlight all the zines that looked interesting to me. And there were tons of amazing zines in those days, on specialized subjects. And then I would send a copy of Boing Boing and ask to trade. And that was kind of like, it was so much like blogs that...
It was paper blogs, wasn't it?
Yeah, it totally was paper blogs. I mean, there was a zine called The Optimistic Pessimist that was for Pez collectors. And, there were like Pez... I'm sure there were Pez collector blogs now. And there was another one, sure, I remember called 8-Track Mind for people who were 8-Track tape aficionados. Wow. So every specialized interest you can imagine, there was a zine for it. So that kind of thing, when the web came along, and especially when the blogging platform came, and I realized that this was a new way to publish zine-like stuff, which is like, oh my God, I've got to do this. And so Boing Boing became a zine and just kind of forgot all about the print version, because just the expenses involved in publishing zines were crazy, especially when we got to the level where Boing Boing was and we were doing like 17,000 print run. And the distributors of independent zines were like ripping off zine makers left and right. Oh. And a lot of myself and a lot of friends, the big zine distributor out of Austin, Texas, went belly up and ended up like owing me tens of thousands of dollars and lots of other zine folks. It was a really dark day when that happened. But with the internet, you don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. It's just great.
What was the idea of zines? The zines kind of sprung up out of the, I seem to remember, out of the punk movement in the 70s. And early on, they were Xeroxed, and they were cut, and they were kind of crazy and intentionally kind of primitive, like punk music. That's my memory. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's one of the sources for it. I think another big source was the world of science fiction fandom. There were zines in the 50s. Like some of the first zines were probably even in the 40s and 50s, they were science fiction fandom publications, and EC Comics, Tales from the Crypt and Weird Science, Weird Fantasy. There was a zine called the EC Fan Addict.
Oh, wow.
And, or Fanatic. And so that was kind of one of the first fanzines. And so that mixed with the punk rock aesthetic and mixed with inexpensive computers and ubiquitous Xerox shops really is what made the zine thing take off in the 80s in a big way.
And they were always independent, or they seemed like they were always independent, low-budget productions that, exactly as you say, Tumblr reminds me a lot of the zine scene, was somebody's passion. It was a passion project always.
Yeah.
I'm surprised to hear there were zine distributors. I didn't even know that. I mean, that seems more organized than zines really felt like.
Yeah, it was crazy. The distributors happened pretty early on. I remember when the first issue came out and I sent it into Factsheet 5 to review, somebody from New York called me on the phone and said, we'd like to start carrying Boing Boing and distributing it to newsstands around New York City. And so they put in an order for 100. And so for the issue number 2, I printed up 200 copies, 100 to send to Factsheet 5 people and then another 100 to give to that guy. And it just took off and we got more and more distributors that way. And there were actually a lot of stores around New York and Portland and Seattle and L.A. that dealt almost exclusively in zines. They were just zine stores.
Wow.
And then a lot of independent record stores sold zines. They had a rack for it. And then Tower Records was like a huge...
I used to go there to get zines, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. And, you know, that I do miss some of that. The physicality of print things, there's something really attractive about that. And there are still zine publishers today, and there are zine conventions and things like that. But they do it for a different reason, I think, than why I was doing it. When I was doing it, it was the only way, really, to get your message out there. And now you're kind of going against the grain because it's a lot harder to do a print zine, but I think they appreciate the fact that they're making some kind of physical product. And I'm good for them.
As an editor of Maker, Make Magazine, of course, you're into physical products. That's the whole Make movement.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah. I think, you know, for a lot of people who were zine people, the Make movement is really exciting for them because I think when the World Wide Web came along, people were so excited about what you could do with the web. All these creative geeks who had been making things and playing around with electronics or making records and stuff, they saw the early web as this platform that was ready to be developed. And then, 15 years down the road, they're finally like realizing that the world is this hackable platform that they can work on in the same way that they were doing things on the web. And so the whole Maker movement is filled with former zine publishers and people who are excited about being able to make and modify and repair stuff.
Yeah. So the original print version of Boing Boing, what was the idea? You're a designer, an artist.
Yeah, an illustrator and kind of self-taught.
So was that the point of what was Carla's interest? What was your interest? What were you doing?
Well, I think, one thing was just seeing other magazines and zines that really inspired us, like Paul Krassner's The Realist. Paul Krassner was one of the yippies from the 60s, one of the Chicago 7 defendants, right. And just a great, amazing humorist and Lenny Bruce champion. And I loved his newsletter called The Realist that he put out. And so that was, I saw that. And then things like the Whole Earth Review, a magazine called Mondo 2000 that was kind of...
Oh, yeah. Predecessor to Wired, yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of a strange combination of psychedelic drugs and computer technology. And so all those things were really interesting to Carla and I. And so we wanted to do a magazine that explored underground and independent comics, look at the cool things that people were doing with computers because they were becoming affordable. Like, what were the kinds of things that artists and creative people were able to do with computers now that they could get them in their homes? We were interested in like brain machine technology. You know, you remember those goggles that would do like brainwave entrainment where they would flash lights and make sounds and that kind of stuff. And cyberpunk science fiction was like something that was really interesting to me. And I loved cyberpunk authors' writing, and I wanted to invite them to write nonfiction and write articles. Some of them were also cartoonists, like Rudy Rucker and Mark Laidlaw also like to do cartoons. So I said, why don't you do cartoons for Boing Boing and also do cartoon reporting about real life things? So it was kind of that whole mix of those things. And in a way, you know, a lot of that stuff still lives on in Boing Boing today.
I'm looking at your on Boing Boing Net, you have a kind of little portfolio of some of your writing and your illustration.
Yeah, and, those are some of my early...
I love your style. In fact, your style seems to have caught on. I mean, half the shows on Nickelodeon now have kind of stolen, co-opted your style, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that we all stole from the same source, which was UPA cartoons. It was a group of cartoonists who broke away from Disney in the 50s, I think, because of labor disputes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so they were the creators of Gerald McBoing Boing.
Right.
And Mr. Magoo and a lot of other really weird kind of super flat design characters that have a very distinctive look. And they were a huge, huge influence on lots of people. The creative director of UPA is this guy named Gene Deitch. He lives in Prague now, and he's in his 80s. And he was the creator of a cartoon called Tom Terrific that was on Captain Kangaroo.
Love Tom Terrific.
Yeah. And in the 40s, Gene Deitch did cartoons for a jazz collector magazine called The Record Changer. And he had this little character called the Cat. It was this guy who wore these round black glasses and had a pointy nose. And he would go crazy when he would like pick up a 78 record that he loved. And all these like weird spirals and sparks and stars would be shooting out of his head. And so Gene Deitch is like kind of the, in a way, I think the grandfather of this whole art look. He's still alive and he writes these great blog posts. He wrote a really good autobiography. And his son is Kim Deitch, who's a really well-known underground cartoonist who has a bunch of great comic books that people read.
So you were already into technology. I mean, the early print version of Boing Boing was about, as you said, like Mondo 2000, about technology.
Mm-hmm.
But was it a little subversive? I mean, Krasner was absolutely subversive.
Yeah, well, I think it was a little bit subversive in a playful way. We did a book, a lot of the Boing Boing people got together and did a book called The Happy Mutant Handbook, and the tagline was mischievous fun for higher primates. So I think that's kind of the mindset that we have. And I still kind of like that mischievousness and pranksterishness.
Yes. Yes.
And it gets me in trouble on Boing Boing a lot of times because people get upset and say that that, you know, Boing Boing is supposed to be a responsible, you know, reputable blog. And I don't take it as seriously as maybe I should. You know, I still have the idea that it's fun to be playful with the blog. And some people look to it to be a important news source. And, you know, I think some of the other editors of Boing Boing do consider it to be that way. And I'm glad they do. But my posts tend to be, I think, more playful and lighthearted than a lot of the other editors.
I'm glad you keep that there because it's kind of important to keep it a little bit light as well. And then Boing Boing, I mean, what is the tagline? A collection of
A directory of wonderful things.
Wonderful things. That could be anything.
It could be anything. And like Corey has defined Boing Boing, it is it's about whatever interests the editors of Boing Boing.
Right. And what a great team you put together. Now, I'm looking back at the Happy Mutant Handbook, which you did with Gareth Branwen, who is another wonderful, sweet, great person.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. I love Gareth.
You seem to surround yourself really with wonderful people.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, I have found happy people who are creative and curious and excited about a lot of different things. Gareth is actually one of the people that I discovered through Fact Sheet 5. He was doing a zine called Going Gaga. And it
which
was
about, not about Lady Gaga.
No, it wasn't. But it was about the Dada art movement and situationists and technology and humor. And we immediately became friends when we swapped issues. And then Gareth said, you've got to get onto this thing called The Well.
Oh, The Well.
And so I said, okay. I had seen The Well before. And so he convinced me to get onto The Well. And then that was, I got sucked down that rabbit hole for many years, enjoyable years.
That is another unifying feature. And people like Stuart Brand in early days of technology, where people, a lot of the early ideas about what the internet was going to be and about community, what community meant, started on the Well.
Yeah, definitely. Like Howard Rheingold wrote that book, right. The Virtual Community. And I learned a lot about how to deal with trolls and mm-hmm. flame wars and things like that.
Flame wars on the Well. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they were epic.
Epic.
Yeah, there were some really bad ones. And Howard Rheingold in The Virtual Community wrote a really good telling story about some guy who ended up getting a second Well account because a friend of his stopped using it or something like that. And in this alter ego persona, he was like really mean to people. And finally somebody caught him and said, you're doing this. And he was actually like a really nice guy in his regular persona, but in this fake one, he was like really mean and nasty. And that was like telling, because I think a lot of people take on a different personality when they're online. And I find myself slipping into that too. If somebody says something mean about one of my blog posts, I am, surlier than I am in real life about it.
It's easy to be surly on the internet.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, very easy. But I can't imagine you being surly, Mark. You always seem like such a gentle, kind soul.
Oh, well, thanks. Take a look at some of my comments in my blog posts, and you might change your opinion.
So you Jenny Jardin, Rob Bashiza, Cory Doctorow, and the team that you assembled at Boing Boing was great. You began Boing Boing with Carla, right?
Yeah.
And then how did you add these people? How did you find them?
It was, when it was a blog, it was just me doing it.
Yep.
And I was only doing like maybe one post a day, and sometimes even like one post a week. And then when Dean Kamen announced the Segway, I think he was calling it like Project Ginger. The news was all abuzz, like, what is Project Ginger? What is this thing?
Right.
And so I looked at his patents, because anybody can see his patents online, and I saw this thing that looked like someone was like riding on, standing on top of an old-fashioned lawnmower, those kind of two-wheeled lawnmower. And so I posted a picture of it. I said, is this the Project Ginger
that I remember that post?
And so that got on CNN that night, and it said image from boingboing.net. And I was like leaving for Hawaii the next day or something. And I said, I want people, because like Boing Boing was getting like 300 visitors a day. And then that day when I posted it, it had like 6,000 visitors. And so I wanted to keep things going on there. And Cory Doctorow had been sending me suggestions from time to time to post on Boing Boing. So I emailed Corey and I said, could you take over for me while I'm on vacation? Because I don't want to lose these people. And Corey's like, sure. And so while I was gone, Corey posted like 20 items a day on Boing Boing. When I got back, I'm like, oh my God, look at this. This is crazy. But the thing was, the traffic like had just shot up and had spiked. And I said, Corey, you've got to continue to stay on Boing Boing. And he said, yeah, that sounds great. So then it was Corey and I doing it. And then I invited David Peskovitz, my old friend who I had met when he was an intern at Wired magazine, and I was an editor there, and we became fast friends. And David had done a lot of stuff for Happy Mutant Handbook and the print version of Boing Boing. So he joined us. And then Shenny, we had invited to be a guest blogger. And after her stint, Corey emailed me, said, we've got to have Shenny be part of it. And I said, yeah, you're right. She's got to be part of it. And so we invited her. And it's been like the four of us as the core editors and owners of Boing Boing. When we turned into an LLC, I made them all, owners in the company. And so we're all like shareholders in it. And you know, since then we've added a few other people, like Rob Beskiz is our managing editor who does great stuff. And Maggie Korth Baker is our science editor. And we have a community manager named Antonis. So it's turned into a fun team of people.
Yeah, it's a whole group now. You go to Boing Boing, you got features, podcasts, family, video, comics, music, tech, science, books, film, TV. I mean, isn't it amazing how these things happen? I mean,
it really is.
And the key is surrounding yourself with great people.
Yeah, it really is. People who are jazzed and passionate about things. You really can't go wrong with that. Because they're always doing things. And they may, do something that you disagree with, but it's better to have someone do something than not do anything, and just be deadwood. So it's been just wonderful to, I love looking at Boing Boing just to see what everybody is posting and what they're up to.
Yeah. It's a way of you guys staying in touch as you've spread out all over the country. And
yeah, because we're all distributed. We don't have an office anywhere. You know, Corey's in London. He's actually here right now, though, visiting. He and his family are over at my house right now. So that's been fun. And it's funny, I don't know how I see like these blog posts he's been doing throughout the day today. And I don't know how he does it because he's been like with his kid and wife, but somehow he manages to sneak them in.
I swear, Corey is prolific as hell. I don't know how he does it.
He is. It's amazing. Once he was over like a couple of years ago and he said, I have to write my Guardian column. And so he was like sitting next to me while I was on my computer and he was tapping away and talking to me the whole time, like just talking and having a conversation without interruption. And then he's like, okay, I'm done. And it's like, he must have a huge buffer in his brain or something to be able to do that.
So whenever I talk to Corey, I feel like this, I'm not smart enough to be talking to this man. He's just way, way too smart.
It's amazing how much he knows about so many different subjects.
Yeah. Jenny is another great person. By the way, I feel like thanks to Boing Boing, I know all these people and we've interviewed, I think, almost everybody on the shows and just huge fans of Boing Boing. Jenny's gone through, of course, cancer and come out the other side.
Yeah.
And
has
she started writing again or is she?
She's been writing and she and, I don't know if you know, but she's for the last couple of years has been going out with Miles O'Brien.
I can't miss it. It's all over their Instagram.
Yeah. And so, Shenny has been a space science aficionado for many years. In fact, her grandfather was like a really well-known amateur astronomer who had built telescopes and little astronomy domes in his backyard and stuff like that. And so, I mean, this is like a match made in heaven. They are always traveling around and meeting astronauts and doing all sorts of stuff. So it's great seeing her dispatches. And Miles is a pilot, so they fly around.
They flew cross country.
Yeah.
To her chemo treatments. That was wild.
Yeah. And Shenny stopped off in Albuquerque, New Mexico to hang out with a bunch of Breaking Bad fanatics to watch the season finale from, like, I think episode 3. And they had made like little bags of El Pollo Hermanos chicken and stuff.
That's what I love. And that's what really makes, to me, that's what makes geeks so interesting is their enthusiasm, their passion.
Yeah.
And it's often for strange stuff, but not always. But I love that passion. It doesn't matter what it's for.
Yeah, I agree. I just found out that this guy, the science fiction author I really like named Ernest Klein, who wrote a science fiction novel called Ready Player One.
Yes.
It was a great book. I just got email that he is hosting a pilot for AMC called Geek Out. And they're going to go around to these geeks who are like fanatics about things, like someone who built a whole Star Trek Enterprise bridge in their basement. And he's then going to like give them some kind, you know, like visit them, profile them, and then give them some kind of special treat. Like, I don't know, maybe meeting J.J. Abrams on the set of the next Star Trek,
cool,
something like
that. Cool, yeah.
Yeah, so I can't wait to see that. That was something that years ago when we were at Wired, Kevin Kelly and I were talking about starting a magazine about obsessives, people mm-hmm. who are obsessed with things.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up not doing it because we thought maybe it was kind of like the same story over and over again, you know, but who knows?
I think Boing Boing is in many ways that that magazine.
Yeah, it could. I agree with that.
Yeah. And what you want to do, and I always worry when TV's going to do it, is that you don't want to laugh at people. You don't want to mock them. It's so easy to mock somebody who's built a Star Trek bridge in their living room. You want to honor them for their love and passion and fanaticism.
Yeah, I agree with that so much. It's really ridiculous. I think that the people that are making fun of obsessives like that are the ones who I feel sorry for, because they are not interested enough in anything that they're missing out.
They're too cool.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting about the stuff you do is it's the ultimate cool but it's never that kind of cool. Like, I'm above that. I'm too cool for that. You're never too cool for school. And yet, as a result, Make Magazine's a perfect example. It's the coolest stuff in the world.
Yeah, and the thing that I love about making that I've noticed, like in the last 3 or 4 years, like there were a couple of phases with modern making, and I'd say like modern making starts around the year 2000, when people were able to start sharing projects on the internet and show off what they made, and then Make came along in 2004. That period was just people making great stuff, remembering what their fathers and grandfathers and mothers and grandmothers had made and showing it off. But in the last 3 or 4 years, we've entered this second phase where makers are now making tools for other makers to make really exceptionally cool stuff. So you have things like, you know, Bree Pettis with MakerBot and making 3D printers. You have inexpensive laser cutters. You have the Arduino, which allows artists and designers to create really great interactivity in their projects without being an electrical engineer. Things like Shapeways, rapid prototyping, companies that will make printed circuit boards for you really quickly. Things like SparkFun, where you can buy components and kits, and Adafruit that does the same thing. All these kinds of things are making it possible for people to make electronic and mechanical things that just 5 or 10 years ago would have been impossible or prohibitively expensive to make. It reminds me a lot like podcasting and blogging and things like that, where before podcasting came along, if you wanted to get your message out, you would have to have a radio station and a license, and your audience would be more limited. So it's very much the same. We've got these tools now for makers to make things that look really slick and are comparable to the kinds of things that you see coming out of, you know, giant consumer electronics companies. But this is just like one person on their kitchen table.
Yeah.
I love it. And just as we, when the internet started and we couldn't imagine things like Amazon or eBay or Facebook or Twitter, we're not able to imagine what's going to come out as a result of Arduino and 3D printing and laser cutting and the fact that, you know, the internet allows people to share plans for things, which really causes a rapid evolution in the design and development of things.
And get the materials and parts, which in the past you have to go, you know, I remember going down to electronics stores and going through bins or flea markets, going through place. Now it's just, you know, you go to SparkFun or Adafruit and you just order what you need and boom, you're ready to go. That's so
exactly.
Cool.
And you know, even exotic parts, the internet is like this indexed surplus store now.
Yes, exactly.
You go to eBay and you type in, you know, a certain kind of motor, you know, 3-pole motor, this many volts, and boom, you will find the thing that you need. And that changes things again. Things are taking off so fast that, did a search for remote control lawnmowers. And if you do a Google image search, you'll find all these really cool remote control lawnmowers that people have made. And like 10 years ago, if you wanted to make a remote control lawnmower, it would be hard to find out how to do it. I guess you could look in the back of popular science magazine and look for one of those little classified ads or something. But Right. Now you go online and you will be connected to the 1,000 people who've made one. And chances are they'll be really happy to share that information with you on how they made it too.
Yeah, that's also very cool. I've seen your cigar box ukuleles and different things. How did you get started? What was the first project you started building?
Probably making cigar box guitars and ukuleles. I had a pet when I was younger. My dad's an electrical engineer, so when I was younger, I was doing some electronic projects and things like that, like making strobe lights. I think being interested in music, being interested in the ukulele, I saw this website called Cigar Box Nation that had plans for making cigar box guitars, and it looked like it wasn't that difficult to do. And so I put one together, and I was expecting it to sound awful, and it actually sounded pretty good. And I was like amazed that you could make a musical instrument out of a cigar box and a stick. And so that I got bit by the bug. And then, of course, you raise your own bar and you try to make something a little better the next time. And so that's been something I've done. And they make great gifts too. After I make one, I usually give it away because I just want to clear it out of the house.
There's only so many cigar box guitars you can use.
Exactly.
Do you play them though?
Yeah, I do. You use a thing called the Open G tuning, so that it's really easy to play. You just fret it by, you just do chords by just barring an entire fret.
Right.
It's the same kind of tuning that Keith Richards uses.
Keith Richards invented it. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So it's a great way to play. So yeah, I play blues songs. There's a great series of YouTube videos that this guy named Kenny, I can't remember his last name, does on YouTube, where he shows you how to play three strings and four string cigar box guitar songs, and they're excellent.
So when did you start working at Make Magazine? Were you one of the founders of it?
Yeah, I started from the very beginning. Dale Doherty called me actually when I was living on an island called Rarotonga with my family. We were living in the South Pacific.
I didn't know that. When did you do that?
Yeah, 2003. In June of 2003, when Serena was 5 years old and Jane was 2.5 months old, we sold our house. And I was just a freelance journalist at the time. And the market was so soft around that time, if you remember, for journalism. It was really bad.
Oh, yeah.
It still hasn't recovered to the point where it was. I had been used to, I had this contract with the Industry Standard magazine, and they were just like begging for content. Because to meet the postal requirements, their second-class mailing, they had to have a certain ad-edit ratio, and they had so many ads coming in. They were making like 400-page issues a week.
Whew.
And so the pay rate was incredible, but it all crashed. And so Carla and I had always been interested in islands. When I was really young, my dad was in the Coast Guard, and I lived in Hawaii. And I think that probably instilled in me a love for the Pacific Islands. So
I'm just saying, I'm living in Rarotonga. It's so romantic.
Yeah, it was great. So we lived there. And while I was there, Dale sent me an email. They had dial-up service on this little island, which was great. It was like $6 an hour.
Did you have to go down to an internet cafe?
They didn't. They had internet cafes, but they were really weird. They wouldn't let you bring your own laptop in there. They didn't have Wi-Fi, so you just had to use their machine.
Right.
So I ended up just using the dial-up service that... and this little house that we rented. We were living there, and Dale sent me an email and said, I am the guy who started the hacks series of books for O'Reilly. And there were like Amazon hacks, car PC hacks, astronomy hacks. And they were really fun books. Mm. He said, I want to do a magazine for the general interest, for the general reader about cool stuff to make. And so, when we returned to Los Angeles, I flew up there and met with him, and he wanted to hire me to put together a prototype. So Dale and a guy named David Albertson, who's a really wonderful designer, he does all the designs for the TED events, and I got together and put together a prototype, and they liked the prototype. They sent it around, showed it to Tim O'Reilly and everybody there. And so Dale called me and said, how would you like to, you know, stay on and be editor-in-chief of it? And so I did. And it's been like 9 years now. It's amazing that it's been around that long.
That's so awesome. Did you? And how long did you live in Rarotonga?
Well, the plan was to stay there for a year, and we only ended up being there like a total of 5 months. And there were a few different reasons. One was that the medical care was really substandard, and my daughter got pneumonia when she was like 3 months old. And they gave us this medicine, and we called our doctor in L.A., and he said, you know, don't give that to her. It's been banned in the United States because it can make kids allergic to all antibiotics for the rest of their lives.
That wouldn't be good.
Yeah, it was, and you know, and the other thing was that we were just so dumb. We're so used to having like a social support network that you don't even realize you have one. And so then when you go to an island, and the people living on the island, they were pleasant enough, but they knew that ultimately we were not going to be there forever. So they wisely didn't decide to invest their time in becoming friends with us because, you know, they knew we were going to leave. And so we didn't really have
lonely.
Yeah, we were getting a little lonely. It's true.
Yeah,
it's true. So we came back, and
sometimes paradise ain't so paradisical.
No. We got lice and ringworm and really bad toenail fungus, and I got horrible bronchitis. It was weird. Like, they had one kind of pharmacy store there with just a rack of stuff, and I said, I have this horrible bronchitis. And so they just pointed to the rack, and they said, well, there's, you know, our medicine for...
Pick one.
...for chest thing. And I looked, and every single one of them was just some tincture of morphine.
It won't fix you, but you won't mind.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it was good. It was good that Dale called you and said, hey, I got something for you.
Yeah.
Gave you a reason to come back. Yeah. And Make Magazine has been, I think, very successful, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been successful. I'm just going to try to close this glare a little bit here. Let me just turn this around.
It was all right. We were getting a little taste of Rarotonga coming through
exactly.
The blinds there.
it's doing really well. And, you know, the most fun part of it is the Maker Faire that we have every year.
Oh, my, I love Maker Faire. Man, that is so cool.
And it's growing like crazy. More people every year.
You started it in the San Francisco Bay Area on the peninsula there. You do it in New York. We went to the Detroit Maker Faire. Where else do you do Maker Faires?
Yeah. Well, we have these. We're doing one in Italy and one in Tokyo, and they're ones that are kind of like, you know, the TEDx conference where they're kind of community run,
right?
But they're actually getting really big. Like the Kansas City Maker Faire had 10,000 people at it. And it was just a self-organized thing. They just, you know.
They don't need anybody to put the thing together. They're makers, for crying
exactly.
out loud.
Exactly. And we want them to do that. And it's worked out really well.
We're talking to Mark Frauenfelder of Boing Boing and Make Zine. Mark is such a sweet guy. I just love talking to him. You know, if you're doing a magazine, I know a lot of folks on websites, a lot of people creating content of all kinds, are looking for images, video clips, illustrations, vector illustrations to dress up their presentations, their websites, and so forth. Can I make a recommendation? Have you seen Shutterstock.com? Shutterstock has over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. 20 million of them. Most of them contributed by professional artists, professional photographers. They review every image individually for quality and content, so everything in there is good. And it's so much fun to search Shutterstock. They have the greatest search engine ever. You could drill down by subject, asset type, gender, even emotion. The other day we searched for angry hippos, and there's like a dozen angry hippo illustrations. Anything you want. They have a new color spectrum tool that lets you sort images by color spectrum. So if you're like looking for something that's part of an overall design, you can. I need green angry hippos. Green angry hippos. You can get them. Shareable light boxes. If you're working on a team, you can save the images you want to use to a light box gallery. Share that with other team members. And if you've not seen their iPad app, oh, is it gorgeous? What a Webby! It's so gorgeous. You can use it to search, to display images during presentations. Shutterstock.com. www.theoptimistic.com. We'd like you to try it, and to give you some incentive, we're going to give you 30% off your new account. You could buy images individually or a monthly subscription, which is the best deal. In fact, I have a subscription, I think, for 25, maybe 50 images a day, which is so fantastic. You could download any image in any size, pay one price, and when you use our offer code, you'll save 30% on your next Shutterstock purchase. Just use the offer code TRIANGULATION. Shutterstock.com. From now on, oh, I'm sorry, Triangulation 4. You can see it there on the screen. The offer code is Triangulation and the number 4 for the month of April. Shutterstock.com. Save 30% on a new account using the offer code Triangulation 4. Our guest is Mark Frauen. Am I saying your name right? I want to say Frauenfelder.
That's perfect. Yeah, Frauenfelder.
Frauenfelder.
Fields of Women.
What? Is that what it means? Fields of women?
Yeah.
Wow. Because Mitt Romney had binders full of women, but you got fields full of women.
Fields of them, yeah.
You've done him one better.
I sure have.
But we were talking about the make movement, which is really an interesting movement. And I think in some ways it's a reaction to digital stuff, which are where there's no hand, there's no physicality. Everything is abstract. It's in the mind. You type, and that's about it. And I think people like making things with their hands. And so a lot of the people who are in the maker movement work during the day with computers, and then at night they're building stuff.
Yeah, I think so. And Dale came up with a tagline from Make early on, technology on your time.
Yeah.
And so you're using technology to make things that are both high-tech and low-tech. You know, we've had everything from making an ATL. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. But
that's the original like a catapult thing that they threw rocks with. It was a very early human tool.
Yeah,
you can Otolotl.
Otolotl. And so, you know, how to make an otolotl, how to make a cigar box guitar, but then we have
how to make an otolotl. That's good. Very useful.
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then more sophisticated things like, you know, putting a video camera in a rocket so you can shoot it up in the air and take a video when you're up there. So, yeah, and it really is addictive to once you start making these things. And I've been making more and more things and having just a terrific time, you know, making furniture and electronic musical instruments. Once you start making something, the cool thing is you develop a sense of self-efficacy, you get the feeling that you can handle more and more things around you if they go wrong and have a fair shot at repairing them. So that if your dishwasher goes south, before calling a repairman, you might want to take a look at it yourself. And I've done that, and I've had success on occasion doing it myself before screwing it up even worse and helping the bill when the repairman comes. But it does give you a handle on the world and makes you feel like you have a little more control over what's going on in your world. Instead of always buying the solution to your problem, you have a chance to do something about it yourself. And that's one of the best benefits, I think, from making things that a lot of people who don't make things are missing out on.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, because there's so much in your life you don't have control over, you know,
right.
Politics, the economy, your boss, those kinds of things. And so to be able to have a little bit of say in the human-made world around you has great benefits. And I think people who cook get that same feeling too. People who make food, rather than always depending on pre-prepared packaged foods or going out all the time, if you know how to make your own food, that's a form of power.
We really have, and I hadn't really thought about that, but we really have become alienated from the sources of our technologies, of our food, of the stuff we consume. It's all kind of done for us behind the scenes. And I think you're right. I feel totally incompetent when it comes. I don't even know how, I know basically how a car works, but I couldn't take a look at an engine these days and say, well, that must be broken. Certainly not a dishwasher. That's a really good point I hadn't really thought of.
Yeah, I think Matthew Crawford was the one who said, when you open the hood of your car, there's another hood.
Yeah, there's nothing in there. No user serviceable parts inside is the motto of our generation.
Yeah.
And we need to get past that. I love that. And I'm glad you said cooking, because I do cook. And you're right. I mean, you do get a sense of how stuff works and a certain confidence that you could step into the kitchen and whip something up. I guess the next step is to go out and hunt your own food.
Yeah,
and,
which...
And grow it.
Have you ever had Tim Ferriss on Triangulation?
I have, and I know Tim. And yeah, that's the new thing. If Mark Zuckerberg does that too. We want anything he hasn't killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that. That would make me a vegetarian very, very quickly.
Yeah, it would be difficult for me to do. I'll admit that I'm a hypocrite because I eat meat, but I just can't do it.
Right.
I can't hunt the animal.
Right. Well, hey, look, you're fixing your dishwasher. Let's not go crazy here, okay? It's like I have fished. Fishing is
oh,
not
yeah.
eating the fish that I've fished. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's sort of the same thing, huh?
Yeah.
But I'm not killing a pig.
No.
Not for my bacon.
No.
Tell me some of the fun projects you're working on for Make upcoming.
Let's see. One thing that I plan on doing on Make soon, I'm actually working on a book for projects for fathers and daughters to do together.
Oh, I love that idea.
And it'll be really fun. And so one of them is this.
I love that idea. You have two? Do you have two girls?
Yeah, two girls. One's 15 and the other one is 10.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's been fun. One of the things is I was looking at a lie detector circuit online. I wanted to make like a little bracelet that was a lie detector bracelet.
Oh, great.
But
give that to them. Have the 10-year-old make that for the 15-year-old.
believe me, we could use it.
I know you can. I know. I have teenagers too. Yeah, I know.
You know. What we ended up doing is turning it into a fun musical instrument where it looks like it's a little craft box with two coins that have been glued on top, and the coins underneath you have some circuitry. And so one kid can touch one coin, the other kid can touch the other coin, and then they will, if you then like you can touch the other kid's nose or ear or head or any other body part, and it will make music. And you know, the more surface area you touch, the tone will change. And so it's this like this musical instrument that's like a collaborative friend project. It's really fun.
Wow. That is great. I love the idea of father-daughter projects because there's a lot of father-son. I mean, you know, I love Geek Dad, which is a wonderful column in Wired magazine. And sometimes I look at that and I go, I was a terrible father. The one that put me over the edge was they took old chicken bones and they made a dinosaur.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. They showed how to boil down the bones and then reassemble it. It wasn't a dinosaur. It was a chicken.
Yeah.
But you could make a dinosaur out of it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, chickens were dinosaurs.
That's right.
That's what the Tyrannosaurus Rex evolved into.
Yes.
Which is interesting. You can, like, they have, like, activated the genes in chickens, and they can make them have razor-sharp teeth.
Let's not.
No.
Let's not.
Let's not do that, because chickens are not really that friendly.
I saw Jurassic Park. I don't know. You have chickens?
Well, I had them. Coyotes got them all. And I really loved the chickens, but they did not return love. I don't think they're capable of really liking
they're
people.
They're actually
that
T-Rexes. Yeah, they're mini T-Rexes, actually.
Yeah.
Come to think of it. So that's a book that you're working on. That's cool.
Yeah.
And the first place I found out about MakerBot and Bree Pettis's 3D printer and 3D printers in general was Make Magazine. That seems to be a movement that's taking off in a lot of interesting directions.
Yeah. I mean,
do you have a 3D printer?
I do. We got a printer called the PrinterBot Junior, and it's a small 3D printer, and we got it for a couple of reasons. One is that it's really inexpensive. It's only like $400, which is cheap compared to a lot of other printers. Another reason is that it uses a kind of plastic called PLA, which is a low-temperature plastic that's made from cornstarch, and it doesn't release noxious vapors when you use
it.
Yeah, the other stuff, a lot of other printers use ABS, which is great. That's the same plastic that Lego bricks are made out of, so they're indestructible, but it smells bad and you need to have ventilation and stuff. The disadvantage is that the print bed's kind of small, so you can only make small things. But I have not used it to make anything useful yet, but I think once I the next time I need to like fix my dishwasher, like one of those little wheels for the rat.
That's what they always say. Oh yeah, you can make that part on your 3D printer. And I always say, no, you can't.
Yeah. Well, people have. The thing is, you have to realize that it's going to cost you in time much, much more than to just order the part.
Buy the part. And how robust and reliable will it be? First, you got to find the design. You're making it out of plastic. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I love that idea, but
I think ABS would hold up pretty well. Actually,
cornstarch doesn't, though. I don't think.
Yeah, the material that I find that's fantastic to repair stuff is Sugru. Do you know that stuff?
No, what's that?
It's like a plastic moldable silicone that comes in a foil pouch, and then once you open it, it's kind of it has a consistency of like modeling clay.
I've played with it. I have seen it. Yeah.
And then it hardens. It air cures into this tough rubber, and it sticks onto everything. So like I have used it to repair headphones. I actually have used it to repair my washer, and it survives a lot of cycles in the washer. I've used it for tons. I've used it to repair the zippers on my luggage. It's wonderful stuff. I use it all the time.
How do you spell it?
Sugru.
Sugru. And air curing putty. And you can buy it from Amazon. The future needs fixing. Is the motto of their website.
Yeah. It's really good stuff. You know what I used it for is to make like a little kind of circular ring around the power button on my Nexus 7 tablet because I was always accidentally shutting it off to when I wanted to adjust the volume.
Yeah, me too.
So I made that like this little kind of ring barrier right around the button. So when I really have to like get my finger in there to turn it off. And it's made a world of difference to have that there.
Do you have like a box of it in your cupboard?
Yeah. I keep it in the fridge, and it stays. Once you open that little foil pack, though, wait for a few things to break.
Yeah,
like put them in a drawer and say, okay, it's time to open up a pack of Sugru and go to work.
$18 for 8 mini packs of Sugru.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
highly recommend it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's people are making hooks for their pot lids.
All sorts of stuff. And it sticks to anything, which is pretty amazing.
Now, I saw that MakerBot is doing a desktop scanner so that you can scan something in your desktop scanner and then send it to your MakerBot and make it.
Yeah, I think that's cool. I have not seen it in action.
No, me neither.
But if it does a really good job of scanning something, that going to be wonderful for people who want to repair or duplicate things that they have.
Now get ready for this. I don't know if Make Magazine is going to end up covering this, but we had some guys in who said we're making a laser printer for genomes that you can you can print your own genomes. You know?
And then what can you do with that once that happens?
Take over the world? I don't know.
I always wondered that, like they sequencing the human genome.
Does. It's like a sequencer in your house.
Mm-hmm. I make make a glow in the dark clone of your kid, I guess.
Yeah, sure. You could take you could make some glow in the dark lemon trees, so you wouldn't have to have lights around your house. I think this is the next thing. Make Magazine is you can't make balloon cameras forever. You got to do something.
No. You got to. We actually did do a biohacking issue.
Oh, cool!
Early on, where we showed how to amplify DNA with a sequencer of some kind, grafting branches onto trees, so you could have a tree that would grow a lot of different kinds of fruit and stuff. And then it ended up being our worst selling issue.
Really? Because nobody now that's interesting. Because I've always wondered this. I feel like when I read Make Magazine, it's aspirational for me. I look at this stuff. I'm never going to make any of this stuff, but it's just fun to read about.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do that.
But it sounds like that's going to be definitely the case for genome hacking.
Yeah.
So given that didn't sell well, it sounds like people do buy stuff that they think they might make.
Yeah, I think it is true. Every time we do a survey, people say they want to learn basic electronics.
Right.
They want to learn how to use the Arduino.
Yep.
They want to learn, about cool shop tools. And it's just like they want to know the basics. They want to get stuff done.
We got to do. I know Adafruit does Lady Ada does a great podcast on that stuff, and there are a lot of podcasts on that. We got to do something like that, though. I think people do want to learn electronics. They don't,
yeah.
Because we feel alienated from the stuff, the gear we're using. We don't know. It's a black box. That's not right. We know that's not right.
Yeah, I agree. Have you? You've been talking for a while about doing like
I know. We want to build a makerspace. We talked to you about it.
That'd
about
be so cool.
Build a makerspace in the back here. We've got a nice area for it. We got a budget for it. You know, it's still on the table. You guys did as you mentioned, a TV show early on.
Yeah, it was good. It went well. It was on PBS, and the sponsor was Geek Squad, and they just couldn't come up with the money to renew it. And the producer tried to shop around for funds and couldn't get it. But I loved that show. It really was showing you how to make something.
I think there's got to be more. We'll continue to stand. Dale's come out here. We've talked to him, and I love the idea. Now, how does this work? Because you're in Southern California. Make Magazine is kind of out of O'Reilly up here. Do you guys have like editorial meetings where you're all on Skype looking at stuff?
Yeah.
Or you get together? How does that work?
We do. We have editorial meetings using a video conferencing system. We actually just moved to Google Hangouts with that. So we get a lot done that way. I'm down here in LA. We have a makerspace in the office where we have a team of interns who make all the different projects that our contributors send us so that they can make sure that the thing works well and, you know, improve upon it and things like that. So we add a lot of value. Like there's a lot of projects that people post online, like here's how to make something. But what we do is we take those instructions. We make sure that you really can make it. And that, I think, is an important thing that Make does, is we just add a tremendous amount of value to instructions people write, and take really clear, beautiful photos and make sure that the parts are easy to get. You know, somebody writes a project and there's like something that they, you know, some part that they found in their grandfather's barn that you can't get anywhere, then it's not something that we are interested in doing. We'll find something that to make it work. So all those kinds of things really end up making it, the projects in there, something you can actually make.
And speaking of Gareth Branwyn, he's still working for Make. He's writing. In fact, he just wrote about the DC hackerspace, which is celebrating its fifth anniversary. I like this hackerspace movement where they create these places for people to go, workshops, and tools are there and experts are there, and people can kind of build stuff together. That's what I want to build back here. I think it'd be so
that's cool.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what the great thing you get there is the cross pollination of people who are good at things. And then, you know, it's like, you know, my chocolate and your peanut butter kind of thing.
Right.
They come up with amazing things that they wouldn't have been able to do if they hadn't been there face to face talking in a place. Like, you know, the best tool in hackerspace is another hacker there.
And you know what's cool is it goes right back to the well and to the Whole Earth catalog and the earliest days of this stuff. People back then had the same motivations. They wanted to understand. They wanted community. They wanted to build. They wanted to make. And they didn't want anybody to tell them what to do.
Yeah. It was like the old, the roots are the old Whole Earth Review.
Yep.
The Whole Earth catalog, which did all that. And that reminds me, one other thing that I'm working on now is I've partnered with Kevin Kelly, who was one of the founders of Wired and also one of the editors of the Whole Earth Review. He's been doing this great site for a long time called Cool Tools, where every day he reviews a useful tool. And Kevin, I loved working with Kevin in the days of Wired. And when he was editing Whole Earth Review, it was an amazing magazine. And that's what actually turned me on to zines. I discovered zines through an article in the Whole Earth Review. And so Kevin, I'm partnering with Kevin now, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Cool Tools.
Neat.
I'm really excited about it. Do you know Kevin?
I love Kevin. In fact, he's one of the guys we want to get on here. He's got this great Amish beard. He looks like somebody who would be doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and he is the coolest guy in the world. He talks about slow journalism. He wrote What Technology Wants, I think, was his most recent book. In that.
Yeah.
Huge
And
fan.
Out of Control was another one of
out
his
Out of Control,
his books.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great. He's a great thinker.
Yeah.
But he goes deep, which
yeah,
is
he
what
really
I like
does.
About him. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really fun to be working with him again, and after all these years.
That's fun. Look at this cool stuff here. It's at kk.org/cooltools, right?
Yeah, or cool-tools.org.
Cool-tools.org. Could be a book, could be a gadget, could be a Eco Glow chick brooder that for raising your own chickens in case the coyotes get them.
And the cool thing about the site, the thing that attracted me to it was that Kevin wanted it to be not really reviews where people are just reviewing things because it was sent to them to review, but it's like recommendations from people who have been using these things.
Yeah.
And they've said, like, you know, I've raised chickens for 15 years and I've always had a hard time. This is the thing that works for me. And I finally have found the ultimate chick brooder. And it's like, so they're tools that really work. And that was what attracted me to this site in the first place.
Making a solar oven, the ultimate guide to making a solar oven. Look at that. You did that. Oh, no, you wrote a note about it. Bill Becker did it.
Yeah.
Wow. A Waben wallet.
That was a wallet that William Gibson has kind of made famous. I think he tweeted about it. It's made of some kind of substance called Cuban that's indestructible or supposedly indestructible. And so he tweeted about it, and then everybody wants one. They're very hard to get. They're like $50. You have to order them from Hong Kong. You have to go into the post office to sign for it to get it.
Oh, my goodness.
All sorts of weird things. So it's like...
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny. It's clear.
Yeah, it's translucent.
Wow. Now I want one.
I know.
That's the only problem with cool tools. You're going to say, oh, I want that.
It's been dangerous for me. spending so much money buying these things.
You know, the world is so full of amazing things. And I think what Mark Fraunfelder has taken as his mission is to share those things with us and to get us as excited about them as he is. And it's so great to know that there's people like Mark in the world sharing their enthusiasm. So great to talk to you, Mark.
That was fun, Leo. Thanks.
Always a pleasure.
It really is.
Yeah, makezine.com, cool-tools.org.
Mm-hmm.
What else you want to plug? Let's plug some more. You're going to have a book soon?
Sure. Yeah, having a book come out called, the title might be Maker Dad. And it will be published by Amazon, of all places.
I love that. I wonder, my daughter's 21, but maybe I could convince her to do a project or two with me.
Yeah, there could be some cool ones.
You got to do it now while they're 10.
Yeah, definitely. That helps. Yeah, Jane is into all that stuff. Serena's already like she's in the gone. Whole social
yeah.
network.
Yeah, she's gone.
Instagram, yeah. Snapchat.
Yep. Yep. They grow up so fast.
They do.
And what is Carla, your wife, doing? I mean, is she involved in all these projects?
She just finished up a stint as editor, and she was the founding editor-in-chief of Craft Magazine, which was Make's sister publication. And so the magazine folded, unfortunately, and then she was the online editor-in-chief for a while, but Kraft has been folded into the magazine. So she's working on a young adult novel, and she's doing some editing work on a book about kids' education, which is a learning by doing kind of book, project-based learning and stuff.
Are you homeschooling? Are you homeschooling your kids?
We aren't doing it, but I'm actually thinking of homeschooling Jane, my 10-year-old, during sixth grade. Kevin Kelly did that with his kid.
And they had a
fantastic time. Yeah, just 1 year.
Yeah.
And spending a full year and traveling, visiting, farms and factories.
I wish I'd done that.
I think it would be a lot of fun.
Sixth grade's a tough year. It's kind of an in-between year. It'd be perfect year to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be good. So it would be fun for me to do. And I think, you know, it's something that I could post about on Boing Boing and Make and things like that. So it would be a way to, you know, continue to work and have fun with my kid at the same time.
Right. Mark Fraunfelder, thank you so much for joining us on Triangulation. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Leo. Thank you so much.
Next time you're up here, come by.
I definitely will.
Love to see you.
That sounds good.
All right, Mark.
Thanks a lot, Leo.
Take care. Mark Fraunfelder. Okay. We do Triangulation every Wednesday afternoon about 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern time, thereabouts, on twit.tv. Watch live. We love it. I love getting the questions in the interest from the chat room. But if you can't, we make on-demand audio and video available after the fact. Twit.tv/TRI. And, of course, the best way is to subscribe. We've had 97 episodes. You don't want to miss a one. If you subscribe on iTunes or somewhere like that, you'll make sure you get every episode as they come out. Thanks for joining us, and I'll see you next time on Triangulation.